The Guardian.
Saturday night at the clinic with another dose of Football Daily. We're itching to tell you about Group D, a rash of action and some blistering tackles. As Spain, Sweden, Russia and Greece sort out Group D. We've got the cream of your posts and some news to swallow too. And of course, our essential guide to Sunday's action and the grand finale of Group A. Hello friends, here we are at the Gusler Beer Clinic in downtown Vienna. With me, AC Jimbo, Barry Glendenning.
Hello James.
Hello Barry.
You deserted me today.
Indeed I did. And Daniel Oberharter.
Yep, hello.
Hello Daniel Oberharter of Der Standard and worryingly Vice magazine.
Oh yeah.
Is that Vice as in W-E-I-S-S?
No.
Oh, I was afraid of that. I tell you what, it's been a cracking day here in Vienna, hasn't it? Some outstanding action.
Yeah, totally.
Right, okay. And that Greece game that we were all having nightmares about turned out to be quite a thriller.
Just as we imagined, though.
Yeah, indeed so. Barry, did you enjoy the Greece-Russia game?
I did enjoy the Greece-Russia game. They still didn't score, though.
Yes.
And you deserted me today. You seem determined not to address this factor. Well, you left me on my own.
I did indeed, Barry.
You went off with the Jimbo family.
The Jimbo family were in town. My tribe.
And a very nice family.
Oh, thank you, Barry. I'm glad you enjoyed them.
And how did you
ever wind up with a nice family?
With a nice lady like that.
Oh, I don't know.
She's lovely.
Yeah,
you're punching above your weight, Jim.
Indeed, sir. Moving on then, listeners. Time for the news. Bong.
Oh, sorry. Yes, Euro 2012 update. With Ukraine and Poland currently losing their Euros faster than a drunk tourist in a Gdansk clip joint, Spain are now the latest nation looking to step in as hosts. Spanish newspaper ABC said UEFA boss Michel Platini has asked Spanish Federation officials whether they should be able to step in as replacement hosts. Scotland and Italy are also in the hunt. We will be dealing with the issue in July with the visit of our president, said UEFA's director of communications. Anything you hear before then is devoid of reality, including his comment, presumably.
Holland's 4-1 win over France saw the town of Bern's population double Dutched, with 150,000 Dutch fans celebrating in Bern Central Square. When you think that we only have 128,000 people living here, said Bern's mayor, then it is obvious that Friday night marked an absolute record for a number of people squeezing into a pretty small space. He's obviously never travelled EasyJet.
Those crazy Dutch. And in the Premier League, Newcastle's return to the big time continues. The club's players have been told to buy their own club suits in the latest cost-cutting measure from multi-millionaire owner Mike Ashley. Still, having signed for Newcastle, they'll all have experience in finding cheap, threadbare outfits.
Right, now if you're a long-term listener of our exciting Football Daily podcast from Vienna, you'll know that we've had one or two problems with the telephones, but we've got an exciting new technique today, which we're hoping is going to work out a little better, and we might actually hear what our top chums out there on the road have to say about matches. We're going to try it. Our guinea pig is Jonathan Wilson. Jonathan, have you got your can with the piece of string stretched tight at your end? Russia, they got the victory over Greece. It was a far more entertaining game than many expected. And Russia now have Arshavin coming back. Sunny times ahead for Gus Hiddink's side.
Yeah, I mean, I think Arshavin coming back is not just a great thing for them because he's their best player. I think psychologically it's a massive boost as well. So I think they're really looking at tonight, even if they got a goalless draw, after Spain had beaten Sweden. I think they were thinking that they were in a pretty strong position with a point tonight. Having got the win, it's a bonus for them. Arshavin comes back. The whole defensive problem, they seem to have... I'm not saying they've resolved it, because there's still issues there, but they've certainly tightened up from how it was against Spain. I think there's still a concern there, because all the way through the qualifiers, they played with three at the back, with Ignashevic and Sidorzhevsky. They purged that entirely. Played a completely different back four against Spain, went horribly wrong. They've only made one change. Kept Kolodin in, which surprised me because I thought he had an awful game against Spain. They dropped Shirokov, brought in Ignashevic, and looked pretty tight, or certainly tighter than they had been against Spain. So a positive there, plus Arshavin coming back. I think they'd be pretty hopeful against Sweden, particularly if it seems likely Ibrahimovic is not going to be able to play because of his knee injury.
Well, indeed. He went off at half-time apparently to protect his knee, which is swelling up again. But you'd have to wonder about it if he makes the field for the game against Russia and what kind of condition he'll be in. And Russia, they're just building in confidence, as far as I can tell. Nobody's really talked about them as contenders for the later stages of the competition, but Zidianov looked great. Oh, wait, I'm getting hand gestures from Barry, which I'm relieved to say indicate. They're just to say that you, Barry, were picking them.
I've picked them as runners-up.
Did you, Barry?
Yes, I did.
All the way to the final?
Prior to the tournament, I suggested that Germany would beat Russia in the final. I'm sticking with that.
All right, then. Jonathan, is that crazy blue sky thinking from Barry? Or is there some wisdom behind that?
Sure, everyone gets... It's Croatia-Romania finalists. It's written on stars.
All right, well, thanks for letting us in on that particular secret. Fantastic stuff. Well, you sound as though you are a long, long way away, and in fact you are, so I think that's obviously a good telephone line we've got there. Just one final thing. Can it go to penalties between Sweden and Russia?
That's a good question.
All right.
I think not, because Sweden lost only by a single goal, say, rather than by three goals. So it's a no, I think.
Right, okay, excellent answer. Very good. Well, there you go, Jonathan Wilson. Daniel?
Yeah?
What do you think? We got one vote for Russia going all the way to the final.
I don't think so, no.
No, all right then.
No. I would go for Holland.
Yes?
Definitely, yeah.
Right. Well, there's been lots of talk about Holland. We'll get onto them a bit later on with the post and the fact that they haven't actually had to face a defence that wasn't consisting of people on Zimmer frames yet, and that might make a difference when they do. Now, the other game in Group D, of course, saw Spain getting past Sweden with plenty of olés and that. After that last-minute goal from Davide Villa, who's now got four goals in two. And obvious comment here, the house prizes may be falling, but the value of this Spanish villa just keeps going up and up, Barry.
Oh, you're a genius, James.
I suspect I'm not the only one making that comment on Sunday. But anyway.
I suspect you probably are. Mm. But, yeah, Spain were fantastic. I predicted a Spanish win last night, and I was never in any doubt that they would win this game.
Really?
Even until they scored their winner deep, deep in injury time.
Right.
But, they're looking amazing. There are three or four teams looking brilliant so far in this tournament. Holland are one, Spain are another, Portugal as well are looking absolutely fantastic. Only one of them can win the tournament at the moment.
Russia it's going to be, isn't it, didn't you say?
At the moment, my money's on Greece. But, no, I think... God, it's tough. It's a really tough one to call. Spain have looked fantastic.
But you see, it's funny you say that, because my line was almost that Sweden, with their well-organised play, actually put Spain a little bit into perspective. And I know the Spanish should have had that penalty just before half-time. But say after Bizarre, Carlos Puyol went off, they looked like a far less consistent team, Spanish.
The Spanish,
you think? Yeah, I didn't think that they were as impressive.
I don't know. What I saw was Sweden just defending.
Yeah.
They didn't do much attacking at all.
Right.
I thought Spain were dominating all the time.
Mm. Okay, but they did struggle a bit to get that second goal. Having said that, Sweden, once as Jonathan was saying before, once Ibrahimovic had gone off at half-time, it really did look... And they've got to worry now about what happens in the game against Russia. But so basically, I'm the only one here who thought that Spain were taken down a peg or two from that incredible first game against Russia, yes?
Well, they weren't as impressive as they were in that incredible first game against Russia, but I think it would have been an astonishing feat if they had equaled that. I mean, that was one of the best displays of any football team I've ever seen, their first game against Russia, and I would have been shocked if they'd put in a performance like that again. They did enough tonight to win. They were probably a little bit lucky, and Sweden will feel really, really unfortunate, and there'll be a lot of Swedish players tonight just... lying in their hotel room beds, kicking themselves that they got beaten.
And missing, probably.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Fantastic goal from Torres on the ball from Silva, and he managed to...
How was it described in Five Live tonight?
It was deflection.
A deflection, yeah. Yes.
Five Live also called Thierry Henry's majestic little deflection.
That was a tap-in.
And
Torres' goal tonight was a deflection.
Wow.
So, word up to Five Live. It's incredible.
That's what it says on the shirts.
I'm not sure what strikers in Euro 2008 have to do to impress the Five Live commentators, but if Thierry Henry's goal was a tap-in and Torres was a deflection, God help them all.
Indeed so. I just remembered why it was that I thought that Spain were, as the Italians would say, ridimensionato, or put into perspective. It was the fact that that Larsson missed chance.
Oh, yeah.
Larsson a year or two ago would have stuck that in with any available bit of his body, yes? And that would have been Sweden taking the lead in that game.
And if and ands were pots and pans, Jim, we'd all be tinkers.
Indeed, and I resort to my Italian again. If my grandfather had three balls, he would have been a pinball machine. A popular saying, that, bizarrely, in Italy.
See, in Ireland, is if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. And it's a similar thing.
In Austria, if my grandma had wheels, she would be an omnibus, which is an Austrian or German word for
public transport.
Public transport, well, for a bus. Yeah.
Right, and again, hard to argue with that. Okay, is she a
what
big
are you
woman
implying about his grandmother, James? What do you know?
I'm going to move on, because all obvious jokes will only lead to a deterioration of the atmosphere here in the beer keller. Now, a beer clinic, rather. Now, having dealt in a rather cursory fashion with the excitement of Group D, let's have a quick look through today's posts. Plenty of people wondering about the upcoming Holland-Romania game, the deciding day, of course, in Group C, which is coming up, I think, on Tuesday, is it? And are Holland going to play fair? Instant thought in Montreal, asking the question. I doubt it very much. He says, why not get rid of Italy and France, who could come back to haunt them later on, and let Romania get the second spot? It's probably a no-brainer for Van Basten. Barry?
Well, I just think Holland have earned the right to do whatever they so desire. If they want to put out a second team, they can put out a second team. If they want to roll over and lose, they can roll over and lose. They've earned that right. And, the other teams in the group just have to live with that.
Absolutely. Templeton the Rat in Richmond, USA questions whether Van Basten, though, is cynical enough to have the Dutch basically lay down and let Romania through. It's not traditionally the Dutch way, but there are a couple of other people posting in Transfer Function, again in USA, Glendale, and Mannequin Peace in Brussels, who basically both say that perhaps we're bigging up the Dutch a bit more than they really deserve. If it wasn't, for Van der Sar's saves, their opening two games would have had very different results. And as I say, they still have to, as Mannequin Peace says, they still have to dissect a compact defence that isn't littered with OAPs. It'll be interesting to see what happens if they face one of those.
Well, I would argue again that that's a case if my aunt had wheels, she'd be a skateboard,
right.
if it weren't for Van der Sar's saves.
Yeah. You can only beat the teams they put in front of you.
And such like.
Etc.
and so on.
Etc. Do the Austrians have a phrase for that sort of thing, Daniel?
I don't think the Austrians have a phrase for beating the team put in front of you. I think they have a phrase for you can only equalise against the team put in front of you.
That was cruel, but fair.
Okay. Absolutely.
Speaking of Austria, Aurelio Zen says, all this talk of Austria, does no one give Poland a chance? I know their defence is more feeble than JR's puns, but they are okay going forward. Surely there is a decent chance of them beating an already qualified Croatia side that blows hot and cold, while Austria hold Germany to a draw. Daniel, go on. What do you reckon about Austria?
Austria will...
Will?
You know, the thing is, yes. I think Austria has a chance, and that's the thing. Austrians are really excited about Monday because
we have a chance. Yeah,
we have a chance of winning
against Germany.
Against Germany, definitely, we can do it. If someone had told me that a week ago, I would have ignored them.
Right.
I would have said no. Austria's rubbish.
And but why shouldn't we ignore you and go now?
You saw us play.
Yeah.
Well, we have seen you play.
It's the lack of finishing. We did discuss this at length yesterday. Yeah. It's the lack of finishing we're worried about.
The thing about... We would have scored three times, four times or something at the Poland game.
Should I mention your grandmother and wheels?
No.
Okay.
Because I'm telling you, Arto Boric, he's to blame. He's a really good... You know, he's
a holy goalie.
And you're saying that Jens Lehmann isn't of Arto Boric's standard?
Nope.
Okay, I think that you
sorry.
It's a good argument.
I would argue, James, to be fair, the holy goalie, Arto Boric, is probably a better goalkeeper than Jens Lehmann.
Yeah.
But I genuinely think Austria are nowhere near as bad as any people gave them credit for before the tournament started, but they just have a huge problem with scoring goals.
What? Mm. Tell you what,
it's like
minutes?
Me when I was 16 years old. I go out, would I score? No chance.
Right, okay.
Never going to happen.
All right. Oh, Buffon. Malaguena Salarosa says Buffon seemed to settle the best keeper debate last night. But can anyone explain his bizarre neckerchief? Do you know, I had today's Gazette and I was going to have a look. I'm going to try and research this one for tomorrow.
Jimbo, sorry, I know you're a huge fan of Buffon.
I think he's the best.
Yeah, and
I also think that Casillas tonight proves that he isn't the best. He was pretty soft on the Ibrahimovic goal.
Do you think that Buffon's save last night was deliberate or was it...
Yes.
Did he deliberately punch it onto his foot?
No. He basically instinctively threw his body in such a way to clear that ball as far away as possible. Did he actually think, well, I tell you what, if I just tap that ball down towards my foot... No, basically the hand was definitely intentional.
But the thing is, I've seen a still photograph and... He kind of threw his foot up. I think he may have been.
I think he may have meant it.
And he's so good.
He is so good. We're going to try and find out about his neckerchief. Very flash it was. This whole business of him being number 88 back at Parma, this is something that Malaguena Salarosa mentions, and Aurelio Zen then coming back in. He says, I vaguely remember some of that controversy surrounding Buffon in his early days. There were one or two early strikes against Buffon. One was the fact that he used a famous fascist slogan, Boia chi morte, death to those who yield. He also used number 88 when he was at Parma, which, Daniel, as you'll probably be aware, is used sometimes as code for HH Heil Hitler.
Yeah, it being the eighth letter of the alphabet.
Yeah.
And we in Austria have some kind of problems with this as well. Not problems, but Rapid Wien has a ultra scene as well, and they've got stickers that says Ultra 88.
Oh, right, and it's for that reason.
But no, they were founded in 88.
Oh, okay, equally genius.
So it could be both, but I actually do believe him.
All right, okay.
I do remember there was some kerfuffle over somebody posting something on the internet a long time ago. It was, you know, Jimbo 88, and there was a big thing, oh, 88 was HH Heil Hitler, and then it just turned out, it happened to be this person was born in 1988, which is a common thing to put in the end of your username or whatever.
Buffon wasn't born in 88, but he did have another reason. I can't remember if his cat was or something.
Is
like
Buffon
that.
Just possibly an idiot?
Well, I think he's quite a kind of happy-go-lucky guy, and just things used to happen to him. A further example of which, if I just have one more, was the fact that he got into a bit of trouble while he was at Parma for having... he wrote on his CV when he was signing up for some course that he had a degree... and he never did. No, sorry, that he'd had a sixth form college exam or whatever, and he was trying to study for a degree, and it turned out he'd never done this. He basically lied about his school qualification.
So you're suggesting Jean-Louis Buffon?
No, but the funny thing was, it was a law degree he was actually applying for, which is kind of ironic. But anyway,
so
I think he's
a top. Lied on his CV. Absolute thundering disgrace. Nobody else has ever done that, ever.
Now, we all like Gigi Buffon, and I assume that all those slurs were just unfortunate.
You're so happy talking about Buffon and so many stories. It's like a
he
schwank.
Loves Buffon. Jimbo.
A schwank. how very amusing, Daniel. Now, Lee Herring in Edinburgh. Are we not doing some sort of lazy lookalike segment at some point to fill a bit of time? Excellent notion, Lee. How about that one, posters? Lee offers us the Swiss manager and the small one out of Penn and Teller, who I'm not familiar with, Penn and Teller, but I don't know.
I'm familiar. Yeah, it's pretty good. I'd like to put you forward
for
the Luke Skywalker on your son's Lego computer game that he was playing earlier.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Group A, Barry.
Yeah.
See what you can make of that then. Posters. Daniel, any lookalikes just before I get onto Group A?
No.
Oh, don't worry. Yeah, fine.
Nah, it's fine.
Okay. Group A, everybody. And now there are two games going on tomorrow. They're the last games in Group A, of course, so very, very decisive, except in the case of Portugal, who've already won the group. They are taking on Switzerland, who are already out, so no point really talking about that game. The Portuguese are obviously going to rest as many players as possible. Meanwhile, though, the Czech Republic and Turkey both have 3 points, an equal goal difference, and the same goal scored, meaning that if they draw at the end of the normal time, there will be a penalty shootout to determine who goes through. Now, Paul Doyle's going to be at the game for the Guardian's coverage, so let's hear his thoughts on that one. Paul, I noticed that the Czech Republic have been in 3 shootouts at major championships and have won every single one and scored all 20 spot kicks.
Yes, that's true, but still, Karel Bruckner said that he doesn't want it to go to penalties because a different precedent, and that was, this is a new rule. About the group games could go to penalties. In fact, it's not a new rule. It was introduced for Euro 2004, but they didn't have to have recourse to it. So if tomorrow's match does go to penalties, it will be the first time in history that a Euro group game has got to shootout. And as Bruckner was complaining during the week, he didn't even know about this rule. He demanded to see the regulations because he didn't believe it when journalists told him about it. And then he pointed out that in 1996, the Czech Republic lost because of a new rule. That was the golden goal that Germany beat them with in the final. And then in Euro 2004, they were knocked out by a silver goal, which was also a new regulation. So he is quite fearful of new regulations. So he doesn't want it to go to peace. And so, which is a good thing for us, because he said he's going to try and win it in 90 minutes, which suggests, well, I'm not too sure what it suggests, actually. It's quite intriguing how he's going to play, because I was at their match against Portugal, which they lost 3-1, but it was a much improved performance on the match, their opening game against Switzerland, which they won without playing well. And against Portugal, Milan Baros came in for Jan Koller up front, and played well. He was very mobile. He was quite physically strong and bullied the Portuguese defence to an extent. And he brought Lubor Sionko on the right into play and Plasheel on the left. However, what let him down was his finishing. His finishing was as bad as you'd expect from a man who hasn't scored an international goal in 15 months. Which is why all the Czech fans afterwards were saying that Václav Svěrkoš should have played. He was the guy who came on in the first match against Switzerland and scored the winner. He's only got 3 caps, though, and Bruckner is unlikely to start him tomorrow. What he might do, though, is because of Barros' poor finishing, stick Jan Koller up and go back to the famous 4-4-2 with Barros and Koller partnering each other that brought the Czech Republic success in the past. Because Koller doesn't have the mobility anymore to play up front on his own, which is why he was taken off in the first match against Switzerland. And Turkey are quite weak in the air, despite the fact that their centre-backs are big. So if they do go with two up front, that could be a route to success for them. Similarly, Turkey have to decide whether to go with two up front or not. But that's what brought them success against Switzerland when they took off Gökdeniz, who was quite disappointing on the wing, and threw on Semisentruk up alongside Nihat. And if they choose to go with that again, it will make for quite an open and entertaining game, hopefully.
Paul Doyle, that's absolutely fantastic stuff. But what the readers...
We've been down and got a couple of drinks in the meantime.
Yeah, we've had a couple of pints since you started talking. What the kids really want to hear about is your thoughts on how Dirk Kuyt played yesterday for the Dutch.
How did Dirk Kuyt play? Dirk Kuyt played... I think, to give him his due, to really pronounce his name correctly... Because the Dutch journalists were telling me how to pronounce it yesterday. You have to say, Dirk Kuyt, like that. So I think that Dirk Kuyt played very well. I think Malouda helped him with his opening goal by refusing to jump or challenge in any way. But generally, he played very well, and he was quite effective on the counter.
I thought you'd be the big man and admit to that, Paul.
No, it's... No skin off my nose. I'm a fair-minded man.
You certainly are, Paul, and a valuable friend of the pod. Many, many thanks for that superb roundup, and we look forward to speaking to you at the bottom of a well again soon.
Okay. I say I'm a fair-minded man, but yes. I should admit I was talking to Milan Baros after the game against Portugal, having a nice little natter, and I was pretending to be his best friend, and I didn't have the integrity to tell him that I continually slagged him off in articles and said that he shouldn't be even in the Czech squad.
Well, I'm glad you got that off your chest, Paul.
Had he read these articles?
Well, he didn't mention it to me.
Oh, that's fair enough. You're all right then.
Possibly he always slags you off behind your back in the Czech dressing room and didn't have the heart to say it to you.
That's true, actually. I'm going to sleep easier tonight.
Well, thanks very much, Paul. You certainly deserve it. Fantastic.
Do you think the Guardian's Paul Doyle I think he sounds marginally less happy than he did at the African Cup of Nations, but slightly happier than he does when he's in the office.
Well, indeed, indeed. And who could blame him for that? Well, some top action. He's no doubt looking forward to the Turks and the Czech Republic and whatever excitements develop from that match. We will be providing our very own analysis, etc. of that, available for your listening pleasure pretty much from, well, late night Sunday, but early Monday morning. So hopefully you'll join us for that. In the meantime, many thanks, Barry Glendenning.
You're welcome.
Our new producer, Pete. And also Daniel Eberharter.
Yep, thank you.
Not at all, not at all. And hey, Monday. And you, the listener, as ever, we'll be speaking to you soon. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.